ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे
मद्दिष्णदर्शनस्पर्शपूजस्तुत्याभिवन्दनाय भूतेषूर्मा भावनया सत्त्वेना सङ्गमेन च. The devotee should regularly see my statues in the temple, touch my lotus feet, and offer worshipable paraphernalia and prayer. He should see in the spirit of renunciation from the mode of goodness and see every living entity as spiritual. This is advocating here, Lord Kapila Dev, the importance of temple worship, because as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Urvamulam Adashakam Ashvatam Prahor Avyayam Chandansi Yastiparnani Yastam Vedasavedavit Ajas Chorvam Prashita Tastyasaka Guna Pravida Vishaya Pravala Adashamulan Anasantatani Karma Nupanini Manushaloke. This material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, and therefore the varieties that we see here and become attracted to naturally because of the way in which the senses are embedded, the sense objects are embedded within the mind, and the mind is embedded within the sense objects. So as soon as we come into this world as a result of transmigration from one body to the next, a continuation of our last engagement in the objects of the senses, there's a natural proclivity towards being attracted towards the sense objects of the material world. But the variety that we see here in the material world and the experience we have through the senses is illusory. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yehi samsparshaja poga dukhayonaya evate adyantavanta kamateya nateshu ramate poga. An intelligent person doesn't take pleasure in these interactions between the senses and the sense objects, knowing adyantavanta, they have a beginning and an end. And also, they're the cause of misery. They're the womb of misery. That's where little Dukhi is born from, contact with the material nature. And here, Dukhi, come here. So one has to have an alternative. In terms of a number line, the material world is the negative numbers on the line. And one goes deeper and deeper into debt called karma here in the material world by performing material activities without any knowledge of the ultimate goal of life. And there's a saying in America, if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. So some people figure that out after many births and deaths, that this is not working very well. So they come up with various philosophies of getting out of debt. And so one of the ideas, just speculation, is to come up the number line to zero. But one can't rest at zero. Yene ravinakshava muktamaninas tvayastabhava avashuddha bodhaya aruya krishtena parampadam tata patantyato nadrita yushmanangraya. No matter how hard one works to achieve some kind of stay from the onslaught of the material senses by coming to zero and blocking out the senses, eventually one will fall down. Patantyada, again, if one falls down. It happens again and again. All the attempts at finding some kind of liberation don't mean anything until one finds the lotus-eyed Lord. And where does one find one? Right here. You come to this temple and you walk in and you find the best of everything. You have the best incense, the best oil, the best flowers, the best mantras, the best deities, the best deity dressers, the best temple. And if somebody walks in and sees the best of the best of the best and sees Krishna smiling, they can feel satisfied. In fact, Prabhupada says that those who come into a temple of the Lord, that he glorifies the Kanishtha Adhikari. Kanishtha Adhikaris are very advanced, actually, in the scheme of the whole universe. They're very advanced personalities. And then they come into the temple to see the Lord and they become imperceptibly liberated. This is the power of the deities, having deities and a temple where people can come. One of the sites that I cherish so much, in fact, it may be my favorite activity in the Krishna consciousness movement. Every temple in the world, practically, just after the morning program, you'll see very pious people coming to see the Lord. And bless their hearts, they come in and they just sit there or stand there and they just gaze at the Lord. I mean, it melts my heart. I just think, who are these people? They could come and just stand there and look at the Lord. I was in Chicago, and after the morning program, I stayed a little afterwards. Everyone cleared out, and a few business people came in. And they're on their way to work, and they'll just come sit there for 20 minutes. Just sit and just look at Kishore, Kishishi, Kishore, Kishore. I was thinking, who are these people? And they're just drinking in the beautiful form of the Lord. And those who perform the worship within the temple of the Lord know for themselves that they're having communion directly with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because while collecting all the paraphernalia, one feels joy within one's heart. You go out and get the flowers and the tulsi and they bring all the paraphernalia. Just the sight of the Achmana cup today, when I was doing the Guru Puja, this copper, when it's polished to a shine, this, if you look at that, you become liberated. It didn't work on me, but other people. If you look at the polished, this is the Pancharatrik system. It's a direct way of connecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead now through worshiping Him, His form, which is He Himself. And when we sit down to do the puja, those who have come to the point of Brahminical initiation, and they're pouring various substances on the Lord from a conch, and they see that the tulsi leaf is gliding down the Lord's beautiful frame, and it sticks on His hand, or it sticks on His lotus foot. The sun is coming up, the incense is in the air. And where would you rather be, there or driving, you know, in traffic to try to get to a cubicle so you can sit and stare at a screen? Take your choice. And I was thinking about garlands also. Who gets a garland? I mean, what's a garland for anyway? It's a string of flowers. Who does that? I mean, people, they work hard for all kinds of things, like whiskey. I came through the airport in Bombay, and there's whiskey advertisements all the way down, as if it's some kind of nectar. They advertise, this is nectar. But actually, it's a common sense rule that you shouldn't drink anything you can light with a match. So then you come out and people have, they offer, this is what they offer as soon as you come through immigration, cigarettes and whiskey. This is what you get in the material world. This is how depraved you get. So you get to choose between that and coming to see the Lord in the temple with His beautiful smiling face and flower garlands. And this is real life. And this has to be there for the people of the world. These temples have to be here so that people can come and see the Lord for themselves and feel how satisfying it is that the Lord's embracing them within their hearts. And this is one of the great glories of Srila Prabhupada, that he was able to start temples all over the world. And he knew the urgency of it, because people in general have to have a temple. In fact, in the old days, it used to be the temple was the largest structure. Now it's apartment buildings. And you could see the chakra from miles away and feel happy that the Lord's here. He's in the center of the city. I'm working, but still, He's there. You could see Him. So they're very important. Even in a Christian culture, there's the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Montreal, Canada. And there you can walk into that temple and immediately you'll feel the fear of God, because it's such a grand temple, a cathedral. When you walk inside, you feel, oh, I'm a sinner. I'm very low. And He's so great. And people need this. They need to be inspired to walk in and feel this atmosphere. So the devotees appreciate the need in society to show the form of the Lord. In fact, when Prabhupada was starting his campaign for book distribution, he came out with the Krishna book. By the way, the Krishna book saved the Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna consciousness movement didn't used to have any money, kids, back in the old days, let me tell you. There was no money. Devotees were going out selling a few back to Godheads for 25 cents. They're practically starving. But when the Krishna book came out and devotees learned how to sell it, then the money started coming in. It was Krishna, his arrangement. And in the Krishna book, you'll notice there are 52 color prints of Krishna and his pastimes. That's never been done before. No one's ever seen this. No one's ever seen the form of God. No one's had the courage to come out and say, here's God, take a look, accept him, bow down, this is it. And so this is the power of the Krishna consciousness movement. We have actual knowledge that comes down, parampara, that tells what the Lord looks like. We can draw a picture. So coming from the point of zero, one has somewhere to go into the positive numbers. Enter within the temple, circumambulate. There's 64 items of devotional service that one can absorb one's mind and senses in and feel satisfied and happy within one's life. Then one makes advancement from this position of Kanishta Adhikari. First, acharyam eva hariye pujam yasharayate natad pakteshu chanyeshu sapakta prakritis prakritasma smitaha. The Kanishta Adhikari is distinguished as having an attraction for the Lord in the temple, but he doesn't know what is a devotee and how to associate with devotees. And he also doesn't know how to do good for others. Cha'anyeshu. He doesn't have compassion for the other living entities. He doesn't see them as parts and parcel of the Lord. So he's called a prakrita bhakta, materialistic bhakta. So one has to come to the position of a madhyama adhikari. This Ishvare taradineshu palisheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. The madhyama adhikari sees Krishna, sees the devotees, sees the innocent living entities, and also sees those who are envious, and knows how to interact with each one of them. So a person should learn how to associate with devotees properly. Rupa Goswami talks about this in the Nectar of Instruction, and he says, what is the verse? The loving exchanges? Tadati pratyaganati kuyam akyati prichiti bhunkte bochayate chaiva shadviram priti lakshanam. There are exchanges of love. Giving gifts, accepting gifts. Giving prasad, accepting prasad. Revealing one's mind and confidence. And hearing others reveal their mind and confidence. So there's exchange between the devotees, exchange of love. And also he describes krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet pranadibhishta bhajantamisham shushushraya bhajana vignam ananyam nindari shunya hridam ipsita sangha labhya. Various levels of devotees, and one should appropriately associate with the devotees. And so he describes those who say Hare Krishna. Please say Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Anyone in the world says Hare Krishna, then in our mind we worship them. As Mahaprabhu did. He said, anyone in the world, I hear them say Hare Krishna, it comes from their mouth, then they're worshipful amongst all the people of the world because they can say Hare Krishna. This is Shasha Hobata Shwapa Chato Gariyam Yajiva Gre Vartati Namatu Bhyam Tepusta Paste Juhuvusasna Arya Brahmanachar Nama Granantiyate. This is Devahuti says, oh, how wonderful it is that if somebody could just say Hare Krishna, just with the tip of their tongue, even one time, they are spoken of in the Shastra as the greatest of all the personalities. They've already undergone penances, austerities. They've gone to holy places. They're qualified to perform Vedic sacrifice because they can say Hare Krishna. So we can offer obeisances to such personalities in our mind. If you're walking down the street in a place you've never been before, let's say a foreign country, and you don't know the people there, the culture is foreign to you, right? What's your name? Prashant? Prashant Gora. Is that correct? Prashant Gora Prabhu is walking through a foreign city. Which foreign city is he walking through? He's never been there before. Russia? Alaska? Tokyo. He's walking down the streets in Tokyo. Prashant Gora is walking down the street in Tokyo. And someone steps out of a sushi shop and he says, Hare Krishna. And what does Prashant Gora do? He gets in ecstasy. He says, how does this person is qualified to perform Vedic sacrifice. How do they know Hare Krishna? The devotees know this. They're educated in the science of Krishna consciousness. They know that this is not an ordinary thing. So one should have that proclivity to offer obeisances to the Lord within to the devotees within one's mind. Then he says, Dikshasti Chet Pranati Bhishta Bhajam Dhamisham. If one has come to the point of accepting diksha, which means they've taken a vow to chant Hare Krishna, then one should take the trouble to offer obeisances with one's body. And there's various ways of doing that. One can do this. Everyone try it. Do this. This is one. The next is you can put your head, your hands and elbows and knees on the ground. And then the third is you can fall down like a stick. Three ways of offering obeisances to those who are determined and they've taken a vow to chant Hare Krishna. And then Nindadi Shunya Hridimipsita Sangalabhya. Those who have performed the process of devotional service with great determination and become advanced. And what is the definition of advanced? They're not envious anymore. Nirmat Saranam. They're free from the propensity to criticize others for the sake of aggrandizing themselves. And for those who have actually been successful in the process of Krishna consciousness, now one should give one's life. One should associate with these devotees and hear from them, inquire from them, and so forth. So these are the various ways that one can associate with the gradations of devotees. And then, of course, one should avoid those who are inimical towards the Lord. Or even devotees who are initiated, but are of bad character. One can offer them respect as a devotee, but one has permission by the Shastra to stay far away if one chooses. You can hide as when they come out. So then from the temple worship and from the worshiping and befriending the devotees, we hear now that one should also know how to do good for others. One should see that each body in this world is a moving temple. This is called a tabernacle. In the Judeo-Christian system of religion, some of them have this tabernacle. It's a moving structure. And sometimes it's a little box and sometimes a little bigger, but the essence of their deity is there within the box. I saw one in the New Jersey airport. In all the airports in America, there's a system of chapels. Every airport has a chapel in it. So we're going about putting in the Bhagavad Gita's and other books in these places. In California, they're not chapels, they're meditation rooms and yoga rooms and things like that. But I saw in there a tabernacle, and some of the workers would come in on their break and they'd offer their obeisances to the tabernacle. And so Prabhupada mentions that each body of living entities that we see, that's actually a tabernacle. They're walking temples because within each body is the Supreme Personality of Godhead accompanying the living entity. So Jiva Goswami says, if you're doing all kinds of sacrifices and performing devotional service, but you don't know how to do good for others, you don't go out of your way to help the living entities who are entrapped in material bodies, then when you perform your service, it doesn't have very much effect. Just like when you're performing a fire yajna, but there's no fire, and you just pour the ghee onto ashes. So for making rapid advancement, one should also include in one's life the way of the panchatattva, and that is to go out into the world and try to do good for others, to meet others and give them prasadam, the holy names, and transcendental literature, and invite them back to the temple so that they can see Krishna for themselves. They can smell the incense, they can hear the kirtan and so forth. And this makes for a complete life in Krishna consciousness. Now in the last part of the purport, which caught my interest because one of the devotees yesterday mentioned patience. And I was thinking about patience and I saw this verse. And let me just refresh your memory. Everyone okay so far? Still here? Okay. The exact meaning of the word sattvena is given by Sridhar Swami as being synonymous with dharyena, or patience. One must perform devotional service with great patience. One should not give up the execution of devotional service because one or two attempts have not been successful. One must continue. Sri Rupa Goswami also confirms that one should be very enthusiastic and execute devotional service with patience and confidence. Patience is necessary for developing the confidence that, quote, Krishna will certainly accept me because I am engaging in devotional service. One has only to execute service according to the rules and regulations to ensure success. So I'm going to comment on this last section, but before I do, I want to take a few reflections from you about what we've already heard and discussed from the purport or from the monologue so far. Just reflect back. Where's the yellow mic? It's there. The Kanishtha Adhikari is very a high level compared to all the living entities in the world, yes. Yeah, we should appreciate the Kanishtha. We appreciate any level. In fact, somebody was telling me, it was a dialogue between some of Prabhupada's godbrothers after, it was Srila Sridhar Maharaj, and there was the senior Puri Maharaj. And there was discussion going on. I think it was Sridhar Maharaj who said something about how he was naming the different various kinds of devotees, and he was saying that he named Puri Maharaj. He said because he was known in the Gaudiya Math to be very much into deity worship, and he was the go-to person. If people had a shalagram, they'd bring in. So who is this? And he knew everything about deity worship and the Archana Padati. And so he said he's Kanishtha, and then he was talking about and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he's an Uttam, because he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And some of the followers of Pramod Puri Maharaj got incensed, and they thought, how can he say that? So they went to their guru, and they said, this Sridhar Maharaj has called you a Kanishtha Adhikari. And he said, he's given me some Adhikari? So, any Adhikari that we should appreciate. Of course, it seemed and mentioned from many different points of view how these gradations are listed. What else? Yes. Yeah. One, two. Or whoever has the yellow mic.
You told that whoever chants Hare Krishna, we should respect them because they have already performed the penances and austerities in last life to utter that word Hare Krishna.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Something similar, like how devotee is able to respect a person who is just on his tongue, Hare Krishna is coming on, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is able to respect. It seems quite difficult in our case. We are all around devotees who are chanting so much so.
Yeah, you have to start over every day. That's why we do sadhana every day, not every other day, every third day. Because this world is fraught with forgetfulness. And you have to start over and remember every day. This is partly what Prabhupada's saying at the end here. The last sentence really caught my attention. One has to only execute service according to the rules and regulations to ensure success. Start over and remind yourself. Start as a beginner every day. And remember, don't develop entitlement and think that I've done so much. Therefore, now I don't have to respect devotees. But rather, consider yourself not liberated and consider yourself a rank neophyte. And it's actually the highest pleasure one can have is starting over, being humble and just being the servant of all the other devotees. Don't feel entitled. Yes. One, two, three. And in the back, don't hesitate to raise your hands. Okay. One, two, three. Okay. Yellow mic. Keep your hands up. Okay. Just by seeing the the polished ashman cup. One becomes imperceptibly liberated. Yes, it's intangible. It's hard to understand how these things are so powerful, but they're actually the tadiya of the Lord. The tadiyanam samarchanam. The highest worship is of Vishnu, but higher than that is the worship of those things that are Vishnu's paraphernalia, and that those things that are dear to Lord Vishnu. So in the puja, as you most all of you know, for instance, if you do elaborate puja, you worship each one of the articles that you install. You install all the articles, and each one you make a place for them, and then you put down the conch, you worship the conch. You put down the bell, you worship the bell. There are mantras to worship each one of the articles that you're going to offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an extremely absorbing science, the Pancharatrik science. And who is next? One and then two. Yes. What happened to the yellow mic? It's dead? There it is.
Hare Krishna. So you mentioned how every living entity is like a tabernacle, which is like a living temple moving around, because the supposed soul is residing in the heart of the Buddha.
Oh yeah. And you know, going out to meet people, deliberately go out to meet them and have a Krishna conscious interaction, you can't have any more profound experience than that in this world. Because each living entity is a part of Krishna. It's a spiritual particle. I mean, even in the Gita, Krishna says, Ascharyavat paschachi kaschadenam, Ascharyavat vadadita taibachanya. The living, the soul is amazing. Some hear of him as amazing. Some see him as amazing. Some can't understand him even after hearing everything about him. And if you go out and deliberately meet people and see, there's a temple, who's the living entity inside? I mean, what is it? What is that living entity? And take a look around the room, you'll notice that if you look in somebody's eyes, that there's somebody else looking back at you. Try to figure out who that is. Just take a quick look if you dare. Go ahead, look at somebody. Come on, work with me now. Turn and look at somebody's eyes. It's hard, right? You gotta look away. You go like, hey, stop looking at me. You know, if you're driving down the road in a car, and you know, there's somebody driving next to you, and you look at them, they'll go like, what are you looking at me for? Even if you look at an animal, you look at a dog or a cat, they go, what? You know, so there's somebody there. What? Who is that? That's interesting. So if you take that, and then you know the science of Krishna consciousness, that the living entity is actually meant to be part of the spiritual energy, meant to be connected to Krishna. It's a science. And if you go out deliberately into the world and you meet these living entities and you deliberately try to connect them to Krishna, oh, that's profound. I mean, we were walking around town the other day. You know, we were just like walking around. We're here now, you know. Watch out, here we come, the whole group of us. And so there was this cafe and there was a man sitting there on the phone and I could see him through the window. He could see us. And he thought, I'm safe. There's a window between me and them. So I looked at him, and he goes, yeah, yeah, right. And like pretends more like he's more into the phone and everything. So I kind of knocked on the thing. I said, I'm coming in. And he's like. We went right in that cafe, and we met that person and talked to him and everything. And he was one of the ones who, you know, got deeply into his phone and like, I can't talk. And you can see how people, they want to, try to. They understand what you're doing. The soul knows. In fact, when we go out and do Harinam in cities around the world like New York, you know, some people, as Krishna says, they become joyful and they start dancing. Other people, they become angry. Other people run away. But what is it? What's going on there? They know. The living entity knows deep inside that I'm part of Krishna and I'm here hiding. Dave Amrita Swami uses the phrase, he says, mass consensual trance. They consent to it. The living entity consents to it. He says, I consent to be in trance and to forget about God. And whatever you can give me that helps him forget. Television. Give me television. I'll just look at it all day. Or, you know, give me some kind of intoxication, so I'll get lost in dreams and all these. They try to forget. So when the devotees go out and they meet people deliberately, they find the most, they're uncovering the great treasures of life, which is consciousness. It's the experiment of consciousness. And there's no better experiment than going out and trying to connect people to the Supreme Spirit. Because then you really see how it's real. There's a real relationship there. Mataji, you had your hand up. Do you have the yellow mic? Here it comes.
Thank you for the enlightening lecture. The striking point that I like was that when you said that when anybody comes into the temple, he sees the best of everything over here, the best of deity, the best of deity dressing. So I could relate to it very easily, because when I came for the first time in Sri Radha Kunj Bihari temple, as soon as I saw the deity, the first desire that came from my mouth was, "Oh Krishna, where were you? I wish I can see you every day."
Yeah, it just comes, you become emotive, right? Naturally, by coming in the environment. You reminded me, I gave initiation to a devotee who comes from a long line of Baptists. And, you know, she's very enlivened and advanced devotee. And when I gave the initiation, her husband, who's a Baptist minister, was coming to the initiation. And he wasn't so much in favor of it. And also, people from her parish were coming, if that's what they call it in baptism. I may be mixing. But in any case, the people from her previous congregation, who were all Christians, never been to a Hare Krishna temple before. And so I was really thinking of, when I heard they're all coming, I was thinking, what am I going to say to satisfy the devotees and talk about what the process of initiation is, and talk to these people their first time, and everyone's saying, wait till you get to the fire sacrifice, they're going to go crazy. I see that. And like, wow, now I told you it was a pagan ritual, there's the fire. So when I came to the temple in Dallas where this would take place, I was really meditating on how to accommodate everybody in that circumstance. And that temple's so opulent. Tamal Krishna Maharaj built that, and it's a beautiful temple. So when I got in there that morning for the Mangal Arati, and I was chanting japa, and the lights were coming up, and all the pictures of Krishna on the wall, it's so opulent. Spiritual sense gratification at every point. You see Krishna playing with the gopis and cows and all the incense and all these kinds of things. And I just had this overwhelming feeling that this is, we really have something to offer. Whereas I had been trying to accommodate a more stark conception of the Supreme. The sacrifice of the Son of God, and there's a cross, and that's it. There's not much more than that. What more can you talk about or say? But that, with the contrast, I really experience what you're talking about. It's very profound for people to come in the temple and see the deity. Now, I just want to... Okay, one more. Yes, Prabhu, please. Was that you playing harmonium this morning? Yes? It's fantastic.
Thank you, Prabhu, for another enlightening lecture. In the beginning, you mentioned one of the reflections is the advanced devotee sees the deities not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
And one more point that I just kind of reminded me of a similar tangent or a note about Bhakti Raksha Sridhar Maharaj. Some of his disciples, kind of in a complaining mood, said that Swami Maharaj is saying that we are simply ringing the bell and sleeping.
Simply what?
Simply ringing the bell.
Ringing the bell.
And sleeping. So, but Bhakti Raksha Sridhar Maharaj said, yes, Swami Maharaj is the commander-in-chief of Mahaprabhu Sankirtan band. At least we have a position of ringing the bell.
Nice. That's the Vaishnav move.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Beautiful. Now I'm going to embark upon the last part. Because I have a few thoughts about this patience idea, which obviously I haven't gotten to yet. And if I'm not incorrect, I still have 17 minutes. Is that right? Do you all have 17 more minutes? Okay. So before we do, put your hands in the air and say Gauranga as loud as you can. 1, 2, 3. Okay. That'll help. So about patience, I realized how expert I am at one thing, and that's procrastination. Putting things off. Because I once saw a bumper sticker that said, if it wasn't for the last minute, I wouldn't get anything done. And I really appreciated that. So I was thinking about how, about in the study of mathematics, for instance, there's pure math and there's applied math. And so I was thinking about procrastination. I was thinking they could give a course in this at one of the major universities called Applied Procrastination. And this would be the useful application of procrastination. And how is that? In patience and toleration, which is the sister of patience. And that is that when there are, the senses come calling, for instance, one has to be patient and simply go on with one's devotional service. So how do you do that? Just the way you do, you procrastinate on other things. You just put them off. And we were discussing this morning how Haridas Thakur did that. He showed the example of how one can do that. When a woman came to entice him in the middle of the night, then he said, he didn't say, no, get out of here. He just said, hold on, later, because I'm busy right now. So this is one of the ways of an actual practical application of patience is when there are distractions that come to one's into one's purview, one can simply put them off the way one puts off other important things and leaves them to the last minute, like taxes. You can defer taxes to the last. So in order to be patient, one also has to be very thoughtful to consider, like as in the Bhagavatam, tachchadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantya manichatmanam bhaktya shrutagrihitaya, which means that to advance in devotional service, one must have knowledge and detachment. And that one gets from hearing the scriptures. And also, the verse says, one must be thoughtful. And Jiva Goswami emphasizes this in the Bhakti Sandarbha. In order to advance, you have to have knowledge, you have to have detachment to fortify you, and you also have to be thoughtful. So patience requires thoughtfulness. So you have to think about what is the end goal in life, and you have to consider how powerful is the process that you're following. Just like gardeners, farmers, they have to have faith in good seeds. If they have faith in the seeds, they can wait for a long time for the seeds to come up. And so they have to study where the good seeds come from and what constitutes a good seed, who's a good supplier of seeds. And when they trust all that, then they can have patience, because they know I'm doing what I have to do and it'll come out in the end. The seeds will grow and they'll produce the right fruit. So thoughtfulness is important in patience, and also being in preparation mode. If you're not where you want to be, which can disturb one's patience, you'll think, I want to be somewhere else, I want to be further along, but here's where I am now. If you revert to what I like to call preparation mode, that is, you can't do what you want to do right now, so just get prepared to do what you want or need to do later. And Prabhupada talked about this. In fact, there's a whole chapter in the Prabhupada Lilamrita called A Life of Preparation, Life in Preparation, right? Life in Preparation, what is it? Lifetime in Preparation. Of Lifetime of Preparation? Lifetime in preparation. Perfect. So if you consider, if you're always preparing, you say your mind's agitated, you're not patient, but say, keep preparing. Stay prepared, because your moment will come if you stay prepared. Louis Pasteur said, Great discoveries come only under the prepared mind. And you can't see opportunity unless you're actually really prepared for it. So instead of becoming disturbed, be patient and stay in preparation mode and keep preparing for the inevitable, which is that Krishna will give you the opportunity to move ahead. We also, in discussing patience this morning, visited the verse, Tate anukampam susumikshamano bhunjana evatmakritam vipakam hridvagvapurvir viridam namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak. And in this verse, in which the devotee is advised to remain patient and wait for the mercy of the Lord, correct? Yes?
Yes.
So, in the purport, we hear from the great commentator Sridhar Swami, who says that just as the son of a rich man has one duty to do, and that is stay alive, because he'll inherit the wealth of the father. So in the same way, he says, the devotee has one duty to do, stay alive. Somehow or other, stay alive in Krishna consciousness. And so Krishna says in the Gita, Ye me matam idam nityam anutishtanti madhava. That's 331. And in that verse he said, if you just follow my instructions, everything's going to be fine. Just figure out what the instructions are and follow them. And in the purport, Prabhupada says something so encouraging and which invokes patience in devotees, in that he said, there are many scholars who study the Bhagavad Gita and they wildly speculate about what it means. They're maya pritagyana, and therefore, because they're not faithful to Krishna's instructions, they just misuse them, and rampantly misuse them, then they don't get anything. But the sincere person, he says, who believes in Krishna's instructions, as in what we just heard here, that if you just stick to the simple process, you're going to be successful. Don't freak out. Just stay on the path. Then he says, even if they're not able to do it in the beginning, you're not able to follow properly, but if you have faith in the process and you just do the best you can and you continue, he said, that person will be ultimately successful. And in the light of the Bhagavad, Prabhupada writes about how in the rainy season, it's mating time. So once the female becomes pregnant, she's going to give birth. So in a similar way, once one's contacted devotional service, the result is inevitable. So Prabhupada says, you should just go on with faith, following the process as given by the great acharyas and your spiritual master, and you'll be successful. And he said, the result is sure and certain, even if you don't desire it. Like you might change your mind and say, I don't want this anymore. Too late. It'll come of its own force, just like you're pregnant. It's like, it's going to come. Prabhupada says, it has its own force. It's coming from Krishna. It's coming from a higher level. So we don't have to become impatient, but just believe in the seeds. Know where we got them. They're coming from the best source. And these seeds work. The mahamantra, the mantras, or the bija, they work. And plant them every day. Water them every day to the best of your ability. And even if you're terrible at it, even if you're not doing a good job because of your past encounters of the material world and your mind's disturbed, Krishna will make up for it because of your sincerity if you go on and just be patient and stay in preparation mode. And finally, a quotation that I always like to keep in my mind. Do you have this phrase in India called a big shot? If someone is a big shot? What does it mean, a big shot? A big shot. If you say that guy's a big shot, what does it mean? A big person, right? A big shot can be like a rich or famous or like they're something. They're famous or something, like they're called a big shot. Yes? Okay, so there's a saying I learned many years ago. A big shot is just a little shot who keeps on shooting. So, you know, if you trace back the history of all the big shots in the world, you know, what did they do that was any special? Most of the time you hear, they just kept going. You just keep doing it. Take the shot that you can. Don't fail to take the shots that you can take, because you can't do the big thing. So, last concept is of compounded interest. There's a story about a father who, in his will, he has two sons. So one of them, he says, you can have they can choose. One of them can have $1 million, and the other one gets from his fortune, he can inherit, he can have a penny that doubles every day for 30 days. So the one says, oh, I'll take the $1 million. And the other one says, all right, I'll take the penny. So it turns out that the penny doubled every day comes out to about $5.5 million. And if you study the science of investing and you look at compounded interest, just tiny little increments every day, reinvested. Then if you start early investing, you can develop wealth, even if you're not you're not making a lot of money. In fact, there was a book I read a long time ago. It was called The Richest Man in Babylon. And it's all about the principles of investing. So his formula for becoming wealthy was that whatever kind of money you make, put away 10% of the gross, and then put it in an investment somewhere where you're making some interest on the 10%. And so he shows in different ways, if you start early when you're 20 years old or something like that, even if it's just a little bit, over time, by the power of compounding interest, it becomes a massive fortune. So in the same way in devotional service, if you remember to invest at least 10%, and Prabhupada gives this figure, I'm not making these things up, but in the Prachetas, they spent 10,000 years underwater out of the 100,000 years they live, and Prabhupada said, if you can put aside even 10% of your life for this kind of thing, then you'll be a success. So similarly, if you just remember, like, I've got so much complication in my life, I have so many other things I have to do, put away 10%. And in The Richest Man in Babylon, it's called pay yourself first. You've got all these creditors to pay, you can just keep paying them your whole life and you'll never have anything. But he says, before you pay your credit cards, before you pay your insurance, before you pay anything, take 10% out of the gross and pay yourself. So same thing, you have 24 hours in a day. Pay yourself first. Give yourself that, you know, full concentration on your core activities in devotional service. And if you just spend 10% of your day like that every day, you'll become a spiritual billionaire very soon. So it's been a veritable feast for me, and literal, being here, because the cooks, there's no better cooks than in Pune. I know this because this is my favorite activity, is taking prasadam. But it's been a veritable feast for me being here in this beautiful center. And I thank Krishna for, you know, transporting me to this spiritual planet that you all live on and allowing me to walk around and be in awe of all that you do here. So please have full faith that your leadership is the best of the best, and everything that you're doing here is changing the world. Every day, the activities that you're doing just here in the temple, what to speak of the powerful outreach that you've developed here, is a powerful influence on the entire world, just from this one spiritual planet that you've created right here in the material world. So thank you very, very much for your sincere activities in spreading the Krishna Consciousness Movement and for letting me come and have a look at it. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Haribo. Nitai Gaura Haribo. 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo. Nitai Gaura Haribo. 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo. Vanchakopadrubhishcha kripasanabhevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Natta Koti Vaishnavini Ki Jai.
Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman. Hey! Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman.